Yes, we are back, Coast to Coast AM, and I am really excited because one of the things I'm passionate about is talking about our undiscovered potential and getting people to think differently. You know, the mind is capable of many different states of consciousness. Only some of them are acceptable to the Western world, ones that have to do with consumerism, consumption, things like that. But we're capable of so much more. And that's why our next guest, I think, is someone who has done quite a bit to push people out of the box. J.Z. Knight and her students were responsible for making the very successful film called What the Bleep Do We Know? And in it, they explore the idea that thoughts are actual things and that we get addicted to this emotional state, whether it's love or lust or hatred, these emotional states that many people have every single day and many times a day produce a reaction, a physiological response that releases chemicals that we end up getting addicted to. So we start to go out of our way to feel these different emotions because the things that happen in our body that coincide with these emotions create some sort of addiction to it. And it goes way beyond that. I mean, it really talks about how our thoughts can really interact with matter and energy, and that we can alter the things around us, the things within inside us. So it was one thing that really shifted people's ideas about what was possible. And from there, a whole universe of conscious media has opened up. The Secret, The Way of the Peaceful Warrior, on and on and on. So we're going to talk about this and much more with J.Z. Knight right after the break. Stay there. Welcome back to Coast AM. We're talking with J.Z. Knight, someone who's not been on this program in about 6-7 years. And she is someone who delivers a message from an enlightened teacher, Ramtha, who lived about 35,000 years ago, was a warrior king in the ancient and lost continent of Lemuria. We're going to talk about this, and we're going to talk about some of the prophetic messages that have been coming through since she was last on, and her very large body of work that inspires so many people. And J.Z. Knight, welcome back.
It is my pleasure to be back, and a big shout-out to you, Rob, your audience, and all the lovely people in Yelm, Washington, and around the world that are tuning in tonight. Good morning.
Yeah, wherever you might be in your in your time zone. Now, J.Z., you're someone who really has stood the test of time. You've taken all the slings and arrows that outrageous fortune has delivered. You know, this word channel and what you do is really controversial. Has any of this controversial gotten to you? Is it something that you live with on a daily basis?
That's a great question. Anytime that we venture out of the box that we live in as a society, anytime we do that, the thought police and the incredulous people want to put us back in and in a way hamper our innate discoveries of our mind, our capabilities, our who we are. You know, I was telling you earlier that I tell people when I speak to people around the world that the greatest mystery in the world is you. Most people do not know who they are, why they are, what they're capable of doing. And spiritual, when a person seeks spiritual understanding, they're innately seeking to understand themselves and their relationship to God or the universe or the meaning of life, whatever it is. But it's the greatest journey that we can possibly take. So in this extraordinary and outrageous incident that happened in my life, it has brought a lot of unkind things out in people not liking the possibility of these possibilities. But at the same time, it would be one thing that if this was some sort of psychosis that I had suffered from for 36 years, you could get over that in a hurry when people don't like you. On the other hand, when you see what you see, hear what you hear, go through what you go through, and those experiences are replicatable, after a while, you just begin to understand that this is your truth and other people have their truth. And it's a long experience to allow people their opinion instead of wanting to convince them.
Okay, well,
that a long time ago.
Yeah, let's give people a thumbnail, because you had quite a normal life. It'd be funny enough, you happened to have been born in Roswell, New Mexico.
Yes, in 1946, and the UFO crashed in 47.
Right. And so when did your life take this dramatic turn? I understand that a psychic told you something that was quite prophetic.
When I was in California, I was working with CATV Communications, which was wiring the country for cable TV overhead and underground systems. And I just happened to pass with my friend one day, and we went into this palm reader, and we'd always seen the shop, and I'd never been to a palm reader before, and this person predicted that I would make the move that I eventually made, and that I would have two choices, and where I should go, which is what I subsequently did, and that I would meet the one. And, you know, as a woman, we always think, oh, that's got to be Mr. Wonderful. And all of those events unfolded, and all those things came to pass in my life. But, you know, I think my blessed part of my life was because I was born so poor, and my mother picked cotton, and we lived in a shack. And we didn't have, in those days, medical care or health insurance. I mean, these are field workers. They didn't have anything like that. And sort of the outcropping of that was to be able to use your mind to heal your body or to foretell dreams. And so it was sort of brought up by a very intuitive mother that without all the resources that we have today and that we argue over, my mother actually used her mind in a way to heal, to get information like, don't go to school today because I don't want you crossing the bottoms over to the school bus, that sort of thing. And so I sort of grew up and already had experiences as a child in the cotton fields of Rockwall, Texas.
Was your mother superstitious?
No, my mother wasn't superstitious. Having the ability to know is different than a person who doesn't know who thinks that someone who does is superstitious.
She was intuitive.
Absolutely.
Okay, so
as we all are.
So you heard this prediction from the psychic, and then what happened?
I had voices that started to talk to me when I was in the fields, and I was only 3 years old. But I always had this lovely voice and these lovely beings that always talked to me. And I would tell my mother, and she'd just pat me and say, that's right, darling, that's right, darling. And so I sort of grew up seeing things that other people didn't see and came to the harsh reality that people didn't see what I saw. And so I was never told at home that I was crazy or that I had my special little made-up friend in my life. I was never told anything like that. I realized that I didn't know how, but I just saw things and knew things that seemingly other people around me could know but were afraid to know.
Okay.
And that was my life.
All right. And how did the Ramtha first come to you?
Ramtha, this is a story has been retread so many times. I've told it so many times. In my book, A State of Mind, it really goes into detail about how this happened.
Well, give us the thumbnail.
The thumbnail was working in Tacoma, Washington, getting ready to marry my dentist husband. And we had, we hike because you live in Washington State, people go hiking in the mountains. And so we were hikers and backpackers and and this book came out called Pyramid Power. I don't know if you recall it, but Pyramid Power was that this whole idea that if you put something under it, it would turn milk into yogurt, and it would do all these amazing things. And so we got this great idea to let's make some to scale, align them at True North, and then we'll just put all these little things underneath them. And we just started on a Friday night, and sent the children out the next day and pulled down the blinds, and we worked all day making these modular pyramids, and we put all sorts of things under it. And because my husband was a scientist, he had a scientific mind, you know, we had a very, very detailed list of what we had and how they were progressing. And we did this night and day. And on Sunday afternoon, there were pyramids on top of my stove, on my oven door, I mean, all down the hall. They were everywhere.
Right.
I just started laughing. I was laughing so hard it was stupid, because I felt giddy from no sleep and doing this sort of macabre thing. And at 2:30 in the afternoon, that's where this thing appeared in my kitchen. And my husband had this compass on the table, because we had to line these pyramids in a certain direction and had to be very precise. And this compass just went whining. It sounded like an airplane propeller. And this being manifested in my kitchen. And a lot of his body went up into the ceiling. So he was transparent, but then he wasn't. Very hard to explain. And you don't want to or necessarily think you'll see anything like this in the afternoon. But this is what happened. And that was the first appearance of a being who called himself Rompha, and he appeared three times that day. I was too in shock to be frightened, and he gave a prophecy. The prophecy came to pass, told us what to do. We did exactly that, and that began this tremendous legacy from February 1977.
And you both saw this entity, you and your partner.
My husband did not see well. Oh. What he saw were lights, and he couldn't figure out what was wrong with the compass.
Interesting. So what was the prophecy that he said?
That we had to leave the house we were at, that we were in danger within 2 days, and that we had to be out of there. And we left, obviously, and came back 2.5 days later, and it had been broken into. And my children, ironically, that night had had a dream about it. Were very upset, and that sort of sealed the deal. And they were out. They weren't even in the house during this particular time. So when my children have this nightmare of these people, they call them hippies, breaking into the house and killing my little brother and hurting my mom, and that really terrified me. And so that was sort of the impetus to get up and go and do something, that something had interfered or intervened, some guardian angel or whatever you want to call it, had done for us. And that was the beginning of the saga of Rompha in my life.
Well, was your husband okay with this, that you were, first of all, listening to this aberration,
Well, he could also see things. So
okay.
He didn't see him. He saw lights. He saw the phenomenon, and he absolutely loved it. He loved Rompha. I mean, Rompha said so many wonderful things that were going to happen that he wrote down. We did it. I mean, we did all these things and absolutely got at peace with it.
Now, it must have been hard to tell people about this in the beginning. And if you did, what did they say?
It was hard because I'm a dentist wife. I go to luncheons and to dinners, and we have our friends that we camp with, we hunt with, we have dinner with, and I'm a homeroom mother, and, you know, I'm carting kids back and forth to games. And, you know, I wasn't into any of this, meaning I didn't even know who Edgar Cayce was, for God's sakes. I didn't know anything about the spiritualist, New Age, any of that stuff. I mean, I hadn't studied any of that. And so when all of this happened to me, I mean, it's rather a long story, but what became really convincing about this being is the day that he pulled me out of my body. And when he pulled me out of my body, he wanted to show me a realm that I would know things in that was different than the one I was in. And I was terrified it was going to die, and my kids would come home and find their mother dead, and dinner wouldn't be made, and, I mean, all these sorts of things. What really really turned me around was the day he took me out of my body. And that was an extraordinary day.
Well, where did he take you?
Well, first off, he taught me how to do this, and I couldn't do it. I was too scared. And so he reached, I know this will sound strange, he reached in the top of my head and pulled me out. Now, Ramtha is huge. This is like over 7 feet tall. He pulled me out, and I floated. I was a helium balloon.
Like your astral body he pulled out. Is that what they call it?
Pulled me out.
Oh.
Of my body. Me, that is inside of this body, that's inside of this brain. He pulled me out of my body, and my awareness, you can call it your higher self, your greater self, I call it yourself. I floated up to the ceiling and became aware that I was looking at something, and I couldn't make out what it was, and I realized it was a cobweb. And I'm an immaculate housekeeper, that I had missed this cobweb. This was so bizarre. I'm looking at this cobweb going, how could I have missed this cobweb? And then it's like I turned, but I didn't. And I looked and I saw him standing in a whole different light. And I saw my body from up above, sitting in the chair, and my ratted hairdo on top. And he pointed his finger. When he pointed his finger, I moved across the room. I went in through a wall that went into our study. I went up the roof and back down. And in a moment, I was back in my body. Now, that went on for every day. And I told my husband about this entire process when he got home from work. I mean, I didn't even know how to talk cogently because of what I experienced. But the third time Ramtha took me out, he pulled on me. I went out on my own, moved up to the ceiling, looked down, and this huge tunnel that, if you could imagine a tornado laying on its side or a wormhole just opened up in my viewing room. Like, it took up the whole wall. And this thing was moving. It was like it was moving around, and this light was coming out of it. And the Ram was standing just outside of that tunnel, and he pointed at me, and I went right into this thing. And I knew, I don't know how I knew at that time, but I already knew what this was.
What was it?
It was the tunnel that connects beyond to beyond the light.
Well, right there, you must have been thinking to yourself, is this a nervous breakdown? Is this a brain tumor? Or am I being subjected to some sort of demonic possession?
Oh, my God, no. I didn't think any of those things, because when you have a near-death experience, you don't think that at all. It's very beautiful where you're at, and you do not think in those terms. Where you're at is more familiar to you than the body. You talk to your body. You talk about the body as if it's another person. You're more at home there than you are here. And the problem was coming back to my body and wrestling with the heaviness of my body. And I was a young woman in those days. The slowness of walking, going up and down stairs, all of those things, the memory of freedom, of what it was to be bathed in love and in light, was the most extraordinary experience. And it became a place that I longed to go to. I didn't enjoy coming back to my body, because sometimes it was like being pushed through. It was like you being pushed through a screen door, and you come back, and you're suddenly in your brain again, and gravity and density, all these things.
Yeah, it sounds like a near-death experience, people.
Well, that's what it was.
Yeah.
And that's what I have been saying since 1977, 78, and on, because I didn't know, I knew that this is how people who had passed on, where they went.
And this is what they describe when they come back, if they come back. Absolutely. Well, hold it right there. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the information that has come through and what people are saying about it. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Rob Simone. We are back talking about one of the most widely recognized and famous channels of an entity called Ramtha, Jay-Z Knight, and she's built a whole school about all the teachings that have come through. And so we get more of a snapshot of her life before Ramtha and how it has affected her and the people who have been looking and studying and poring over the things that come out of the mouth of this Ramtha. Because some of it is understandable. Some of it has to do with quantum physics. Some of it is quite controversial. We're going to talk about all of that right after the break. Stay there. We are back on Coast to Coast AM talking with Jay-Z Knight. And Jay-Z, right before the break, we gave people sort of an idea about your life before Ramtha came in and then after. And you seem to take it all in stride. I mean, what you're telling, talking about your experiences, would send most people to the loony bin. Do you think you were chosen for a reason? Do you think you had a pre-existing way about you that made you the perfect person for this channeling experience?
Oh, you're so kind, Rob. Yes, I think that I had an option to choose this destiny. I didn't know that for a very, very long time. I would find that out, I don't know, 5 or 6 years into Ramtha being here, because it did occur to me one day to ask me, you know, why don't you just do this? You know, you don't need me, you can do this, da-da-da. And I found out, yes, I had a choice to, and of course, you have to subscribe to the concept of reincarnation to give this any credibility, but there is reincarnation. We all have lived many lives and will live many, many more. And in that, we always have a choice. It is free will. It is, we are predestined to come into matter, to evolve matter.
Okay, well, who were you in a past life that led you into this life?
I was in Ramtha's lifetime. And then I had subsequent lifetimes after that, being a part of that particular time. And so I had an opportunity to come and do this work. And it hasn't, you know, it hasn't been an easy task to do, certainly. But it's something that after 36 years, I love what I do. I love people. I love what people are. I love the mystery that we all are and what potentials lie within all of us.
Well, yes. Your past lives, were you anybody that we would know? Any household names?
Oh, yes, but I don't think that's really relevant right now.
Really?
I think what's really relevant, you know, there.
Well, now I'm curious. Now I have to ask.
We're only as great as our current lifetime.
So you'd rather not say who you were?
I'd rather not say.
Ah, because that leads me to think it's somebody big or someone who had a big presence in history.
I had a small presence in history. I think we all have from time to time.
Yeah.
You know, what's happening to me now happened to me a long time ago, and I was sort of burned for it. And, you know, it's a risky thing. Once we get locked into our brain and we get addicted to our chemical reality, we do all live in a state of denial to some degree. And it is at once dangerous and tormenting for us.
What do you mean you got burned? What do you mean?
Well, I was burned at the stake for hearing voices.
Oh, in another life?
Yes.
Ah, in Salem?
No.
Okay.
Oh, no. In France.
Oh, I see.
But anyway, so I always say you're only as great as your current life. And that's actually true to form because all of the other existence we've had have been existences to have an opportunity to make known an unknown. In other words, to expand our life, to expand our knowledge, to make known ideas that are not in time yet. And that's really at the bottom line of the reason that we are here, it sounds rather drab and unglamorous. But if we think about that we're here all to be geniuses, that we're all here to think outside of the box and to bring concepts that haven't been thought before into our own life, that we actually must have the tools to be able to make those things matter in our life. So to me, it's been an extraordinary journey. And
well, let me ask you about the beginning part of the journey. When in the first few years when Marantha was coming out, what kind of things was he talking about?
What kind of things? The most important teachings that he gave, first off, I didn't know what mediums were, and I had finally, and he had sent me to the bookstore, all these little lights would flare over all of these books, and he told me to read, and most of the books I bought, I didn't even know what I was buying, and so it was sort of directed to all of these books, and sometimes when they were excited about me being on a certain page, there'd be so many lights on it, you know, I was swiping them away.
So he was sort of giving you a book list. You were in your own private book club, the Ramtha book club.
I was in my own book club, which was embarrassing, the amount of books that I ended up buying. But what was really important is I was getting an education to ask a greater question, to understand things that, my goodness, that we all have access to libraries around the world and bookstores, but we rarely ever use. So my book list was not novel at all. It was very unique. And so, long story short, his teachings were an introduction that everyone was divine, that they were, we would like to call them in times past, gods, that everyone is a divine being, all 7 billion of us, and that because we are divine, you know, this is the reason for our life and that our life matters and it's important who we are. And he began those teachings and then he would teach people remarkable things about themselves. And you know, he had the power to send runners. He made things happen for people. And his
name Does that include healing as well?
Yes. The important element, though, I asked him one day when I had read Thomas Sturges' book, There is a River, about Edgar Cayce. I was getting familiar with Edgar Cayce, and I was all jazzed, and I said, so this is what I am. I'm a sleeping medium. And he said, well, are you asleep? And I said, well, no. And I asked him if I was psychic, if I was a medium. These are all new terms for me. And he said I was a channel. And so once he explained that to me, basically leaving my body, the ram's not in my body. He's using the brain. He's not in it. He's manipulating my body like a puppet and using the brain and using my brain, as it were. And so when people would start, as his fame grew, we never advertised, just grew by word of mouth. You know, they would say, well, you're a medium. And I said, no, I'm a channel. I'm actually going to leave my body. And nobody kind of understood that. But Ramtha in the 80s really created the term channeling that is so much a part of our lexicon today, that's used every day on news shows, for example, to really determine what was really different about what was going on here. And so that stuck. What happened with his teachings when he were beginning to take people out of new age concepts and old age concepts and superstition and all the sorts of things were to then declare that we were divine and then go about showing us how we were and why we were. And then this long, methodical teaching through the 80s of how to create reality and do marvelous things. And that's what he started doing.
I see. Well, what is it about the word channeling that people have this knee-jerk reaction to? You get a lot of criticism from people who just think that it's not possible and you're making it all up, or it's coming from maybe some sort of fractured personality.
Right. Well, I think all of those people have justifications for thinking all those things. I mean, if you're not understanding or have the knowledge of how this is possible, I mean, it would seem impossible and rather foolish to say something like that and then expose yourself to harsh criticisms. But it is true. It is true that this possibility exists. And I think channeling got a very bad eye. You know, the 80s, I loved the 80s because everyone came out of their spiritual closet. They all began to talk about, you know, near-death experiences. They talked about, you know, out-of-body experiences. People were very free in talking about their experiences they've had that they've always been afraid to speak about. And then the thought police get in and the religion gets in and then, you know, the door slams shut because then they make it to be a bad thing. And it's sort of like ruling people through intimidation. And, you know, before the end of the decade, you know, anybody that was a medium or a psychic now had turned into a channel. And, you know, they were channeling, you know, porpoises and whales and, you know, ancient medicine doctors and, you know, and in one way, it sort of became a circus in that, and that was just fuel for a great deal of criticism. But when we look at ancient prophets, all through biblical texts and other ancient texts, there were always beings that spoke for the Lord, or they spoke for an angel, or they were there to deliver a message, or they had a light around them, and that light did marvelous things. And those are sort of numerous throughout the ancient world and are still numerous today, except that in our society, so geared to materialistic here and now and enclosed with, you know, religion, people are really afraid to go out of the box and begin to explain these abnormal occurrences that they've had happen to them. But you know, when they're ready, they'll begin to seek out and find answers as why these marvelous things have happened to them or frightful things have happened to them. And that'll begin the quest of understanding a bit more who they are in this universe.
Well, it's one thing to say that, to declare you are the channel for a 35,000-year-old warrior king. And I know there's probably a responsibility that you would assume in doing this because you feel as though the information is extremely important. But I wonder, have you ever done anything in your personal life or your professional life to draw more criticism to yourself?
Oh, well, I think everybody has. I mean, everybody's going to criticize you even if you wear your hair wrong. I think that's just a part of life.
So you feel as though...
I don't think anybody passes the perfect test. I mean, we're not really here to be perfect. We're really here to experience life and learn about life. That we gain wisdom. And by wisdom, we begin to understand larger and larger groups of people to whom we otherwise would have been alienated from and maybe judged harshly.
So you feel as though there is a responsibility that is more for you than the average person because... obviously, this knowledge is something for the world, right? Is that something you feel like you have to pass on?
I feel those ideas that I had naively in the beginning were soon crushed. And I realized that, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear anything about this. And yet I just thought it was the most marvelous thing. And, gee, you should see where I go. And this, and I know you'll remember when you were there and all of this. It really is only for those people that have a desire to learn from something out of the box that works. Now, you came to this school and you witnessed an event of advancing people in this school do some pretty marvelous things. It just wasn't about philosophy. It was the focus on a person taking this and experiencing it and proving to themselves that they have these possibilities within them. We're not a religious organization. We do not go out and proselytize to people. We don't go out and say you have to belong to this organization or that. We're simply a school that this is the teacher. Because if you can get past all of this and come and learn about you, then this is where you'll be to learn that knowledge, and it'll be sincere. It's not for everyone. I mean, I don't think, you know, everyone could do really well to learn how really wonderful they really are, juxtaposed against the world and all of its problems and our struggling within it. It's really wonderful, but not everyone is ready to know that.
You talked a little bit before about the early days in the 80s, there was healing going on. Tell me a little bit about some of the healing that's come through, because I wasn't aware of that.
Well,
I mean, physical ailments and diseases, is that what we're talking about?
Yes. Well, the people come and have had those, and Ramtha has, not everyone that has come to see him walked away healed. There are many who did. I experienced that in my own family, some really remarkable healings that even opened up my own sphere to that possibility. My son, Brandy, in the sixth grade, was allergic to everything but water. And if he ate anything, exposed himself to anything, his face would blow up, his hands would swell up. And he came home one day at lunchtime with a friend, and he was screaming and crying, and he was blown up like a balloon. And I immediately went to call the doctor and rush him to emergency room. And Ramtha was there and said, we can take care of this in a moment. And in fact, as a mother, knowing the consequences of delay, I had to look at the RAM and in a moment make a decision that I wanted, that I would, okay, let's do this thing. And so he just asked me to sit Brandy by the bed. And I said, the RAM is here. Give me your hands, close your eyes, and repeat these words. And I don't even remember the words. It's what Ramtha said. And I said them, and my son said them. And I'm telling you, Rob, not even a minute, I took my hands off, and we opened our eyes, and my son's face and hands were absolutely normal within a moment. And his friend, who had come with him, said, Cool, how did you do that? And Brandy ran to the mirror and started jumping on the bed, and I was flabbergasted. I mean, I didn't even say thank you. I didn't even know what to say. I mean, I had witnessed this within an instant. So I took Brandy to the to his medical doctor, where his allergies specialist, and they retested him. He wasn't allergic to anything, and they don't know what had caused that to change. Now, that was with my son, and then my younger son, we had the same situation occur with him. And I think it was very important for me to understand, in something so intimate and so near and dear to me, to have the faith to believe that something was wonderful. And I think it was the test. And my children to this day will tell you that story. So those are things that happened. Now, transferred to audiences, I don't know, because I'm not at those audiences. I am gone. But I know there have been people who had remarkable experiences, and I know there are people who have had no experience at all. And I think that the key here was the relevance of allowing yourself to give it up and allow something greater to work in you. And there are those of us who are afraid, there are those of us who are insecure, and there are those of us who have lived with our illness for so long, we're afraid it will fail at it. Mm. And so these are things that have happened throughout the years.
Yeah, well, a billion people believe in the power of prayer. Is this absolutely another form of non-local healing?
Well, look, you can call it prayer, you can call it anything you want to, but I firmly knew that with the RAM standing there in that room, when my son came in with this problem, that my tendency was not to sit and pray for him because he was too severe. My tendency was to call the doctor and take him to emergency room. Right then and there, I know that Ramtha knew this little boy would follow commands. And what Ramtha said to him that I repeated, didn't make any difference, I repeat it. It's what my son said. that immediately release it. I mean, in a moment. It's like an alternative reality took place right then and there. So I absolutely ascribe to it. What is really important is that we can't just mumble prayers. We can't just mumble mantras. We can't just keep saying things over and over and over. The key is to be absolutely present with what we say. And being present is focus. And that focus is what changes everything. That determines how our mind will be and how our body will follow.
Well, there is a lot more I want to get to with Jay-Z Knight. And we'll talk about more of what has come through, Rantha. That includes politics, political prognostications that have come true. According to Jay-Z, gold, sunspots, earthquakes, and 2012. I'm Rob Simone. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.